Okay, let's change gears for hour number three. And it's great to have back on the program a friend of mine for, God, I don't know how many years, 20 years at least? Preston Dennett, doing really unique work in the field of publishing books, writing books, doing great research in the field of ufology, of abductees, of eyewitness encounters, all kinds of things. Preston is unique in that field. And I'll never forget, Preston, that story about the damn drive-in movie theater. Remember that?
Of course I do, yeah. I will never forget it either.
That was a great story. Preston has the ability to attract people who want to share things that otherwise would go unnoticed and sadly lost. They'd just be lost, and he's documenting them. All of his books, how many now?
We're up to 31 and counting.
Wow. Wow. All of Preston's books are wonderful reads, just like Don Schmidt and Tom Carey's books. They're hard science. Preston is just able to sew these things together in narratives that they're just fascinating, fascinating stories. So you have a new book out, and if you go to Guests, click on Tonight's Guests, you'll see Preston's name right there. And the book is called Humanoids and High Strangeness. And there's a link there if you want to pick it up. It's an Amazon link. You can go right to it. When was that expression first, kind of a hot ticket expression, high strangeness? I remember that before there was a time when high strangeness sort of appeared and people began using it. And it's a very apropos way to talk about things that are so crazy and so supernatural that it fits perfectly. That hasn't always been with us, but it's certainly a cornerstone now in terms of descriptions. Humanoids and High Strangeness. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, well, speaking of when that term came about, I was wondering that because I attracted at least one comment to a witness back in 1992, mm-hmm. But I'm sure it's before that. But at any rate, yeah, this new book really embraces that. Because I know that this is a problem in this field. Sometimes this high strangeness aspect gets censored out of people's reports, or they won't even tell you, you know, the investigator, about some of the more weird aspects.
They're too weird. They don't want to be disbelieved and laughed and mocked at, so they don't tell. They don't say it. That's true.
Right. But now I think we've reached a point where people recognize that the paranormal and UFOs are connected and that some very strange things do happen. And that's sort of the theme of this book, humanoids of all different kinds. Of course, not just grays taking people on board and examining them, mm-hmm. but little blue beam, tall whites, human-looking figures. I mean, you name it, mantids, angels, demonic uh-huh. figures, Bigfoot. Nature spirits. There's even a chapter of a guy swears up and down he saw an elf-like being. Probably not an ET as we would think of it, but definitely a humanoid.
Huh. So much out there. High strangeness. Yes, indeed. Now these, you've got 20 stories fully documented and told in this book, yes?
That's right. Yep, from all over the world, too. United States, of course, but a couple in Canada, a couple in South America, Argentina and Peru, and from across Europe as well, England, France, Germany. Mm-hmm. So you get a sort of a worldwide perspective on this.
Well, the nice thing for you that I've always been happy about is that you have become kind of a magnet for people who wouldn't ordinarily step forward with their stories. They trust you. You're a very trustworthy person, and if anyone wants to tell their story, Preston will be happy to listen to it, and he will not betray any confidences at all. So there's always that. So you get really neat things. There was a time, when it was proffered that the planet had kind of been segmented up into varying areas that different visiting ETs would have primacy over. There was one group in South America, another group in North America, and all that. What's the status of that now? Are people still thinking that, the planet has been divvied up, so to speak, over the needs of differing ETs that come here?
No, I think that's a theory that was sort of what I call shoe fitting, a little bit cherry picking,
gotcha.
And kind of fell to the wayside. Kind of
well,
like,
you know, when that
or thought of me.
When that came out, what the heck's his name? The former National Enquirer writer that did a lot of
Bob
research
Pratt.
In South America.
Bob Pratt.
Robert Pratt. Bob Pratt.
Right.
Really a very interesting fellow who concentrated in the basically the extremely rural areas, jungle areas of South America. And he'd go into these small villages and talk to people and ask them, have you ever seen anything of, he'd point up to the sky, whatever. And he says there was a gold mine of information down there that these really rural, we'd call them primitive, third world tribes and villages and so forth, had these astonishing UFO ET encounters. That was Bob Pratt. And that's when that issue came up that many of the people down there that were reporting UFO events and encounters were talking in a different way than people in North America did. It was very strange. You read Pratt's books, I'm sure, right?
Oh, sure, yeah. He's had a huge influence on this field. And there did seem to be a lot of short, hairy little dwarves down in that area, whereas the U.S.
was
dominated by grays, and Europe had more of the human-looking type ETs. But now we're seeing a much more of a bleed-through with all these areas getting all types of ETs. And that's certainly what I found in my research. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more varied, I think, than people realize in terms of the different, I guess I'll call them ancestries of humanoids.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The more I look into this, I feel like, we all probably share a common heritage, certainly to some extent, because let's face it, they're all humanoids. And they all look very much like us in terms of, being a bipedal being with two arms, two legs.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, which helps you. I mean, there's got to be some implications there.
Couldn't miss them. They're right there, right there. Here's another, just a generic question. Are we getting any kind of a resurgence of abductees now? That was big in the 50s, and then the 60s, 70s, 80s, it took on kind of a darker overtone. It was like there was a different group involved. What's the status on abductions now, ET abductions, generally speaking?
Yeah. Well, I generally use the term onboard experience because some people, don't like the term abduction. And
oh, I
others.
Like that. That's good. Onboard experience. Very good. Yeah.
Right. Because, that's just a generic and very, explanatory. And, you're right. Its heyday, I think, was the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And started to taper off a bit and really has tapered off dramatically over recent years, certainly in the 2020s. And
are they done with us? Did they find out all they needed to find? Is David Jacobs right? Whatever they're doing, they've completed their work. He did propose that in so many words.
Well, he takes a pretty dim view to the whole experience in terms of, is this good for us or not? Mm-hmm. I would put myself more at the opposite end of the spectrum. I don't think they're here to take over or hurt us or scare us.
Oh, they would have French fried the planet long ago. Yeah.
Right. And frankly, the cases I get are mostly benevolent. Not that often it's not scary, because it is. But no, I don't have any evidence of ETs pulling people on board and deliberately torturing them or engaging in sadistic behaviors that we see so often here on Earth.
Like in X-Files.
Right.
Of course, those weren't all ETs, we have to remember. the whole X-Files party line was that it was conspiracy of men working with ETs, and these were bad ETs. But if there's any truth to the idea that the ruling elite of this planet have come to an agreement or working with off-planet intelligence, I think that's quite probable. Can't prove it, but I think that that's something that we need to approach. And it would be that the evil ones on this planet have attracted the evil ones from elsewhere. It's a bad combination. There's no divine, no real leadership, no guidance of anything, I think, that's pleasant or kind. It's a very dark subject for the most part right now. Anyway, you don't come up with that. Go ahead.
No, I think, honestly, the bad actors we have are the ones on this planet. Those are the ones I'm concerned about.
Yeah.
And I point to the MyLab phenomenon, military abduction,
right,
which does seem to be a thing. And that I am absolutely worried about. But as far as being contacted by genuine ETs, while it can be scary, I don't think it's a nefarious experience.
Have you been contacted yet, my friend? Have you? You don't have to tell me. I'm just throwing that at you as a longtime appreciator of your work. You really deserve to have an event, and I maybe.
Well, I've had a few. Yeah, I've had some very close up sightings, some back and forth communication, and a missing time encounter as well. That was back in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm going to put out a book one of these days and lay it all out, because there's some stuff I'm keeping real close to my chest, just not ready to talk about it because I'm working on other people's stuff. But yeah,
right.
I mean, I've absolutely had contact for sure. You can't, I mean, when you're working this close with people who are having regular contact, it's almost inevitable. And I learned that, you know, kind of surveilling other researchers. And I always ask them, I'm like, have you yourself had contact? And most of them have. You know, Barbara Lamb, she's had direct contact. Bud Hopkins got involved because he had a very close-up UFO sighting. John Mack and David Jacobs never admitted to anything, but I know Brad Steiger did. He saw being face-to-face. A lot of researchers have.
Yeah, all those people you named have been on the program, and Brad was Brad and Sherry were very dear friends of yours truly and the program, and so many years of great radio we did, and I certainly remember all that. I miss those people. I had Barbara on once, I think, a long time ago, once or twice, I don't remember. I had John Mack on, David's been on. Yeah, I'll never forget that when he put out the book. Gosh, I can't remember the name of it. And he said at the end of all his research, talking to hundreds and hundreds of, he called them abductees, it was his probable determination that whatever has been going on here for a long 100 years more has pretty well reached its conclusion. And that the next chapter was about to be played, whatever that is. And
we'll,
he didn't
we'll
think.
See, won't we? That's one
Pardon
thing
me?
We can count on.
Oh,
we'll,
yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Because we can certainly count on new developments in this field. And it's been a real new era over these last few years, with this subject being taken much more seriously in official circles.
Right.
And some actual honest-to-God steps towards disclosure. Towards disclosure. It's not disclosure yet.
But they're still playing games, as you know.
Yeah.
They're not going to just say, hey, here it is. They're holding on. It has to do with the military-industrial complex to, I'm sure, a substantial degree, why they're not just telling us the truth. We have a God-given right to know what's going on this planet and in the universe. And you know, you miss people like Kelly Johnson, the Skunk Works guy. They knew what was going on, but there was only so much that they would really let go. Was it Kelly that said, we have the technology now to take E.T. home? It was him, wasn't it?
No, I think that was Ben Rich.
Oh, it was Ben, yes. Kelly Johnson succeeded Ben Rich, and it was Ben right before he died. It was, in fact, he was giving a lecture at UCLA, I believe, or USC.
Yeah, we've had a lot of this technology for years and years. In fact, Senator Barry Goldwater found out about it, tried to get into the, quote, blue room, where a lot of this ET tech is being worked on and studied and reverse engineered. And he was told flat out, you do not have the need to know. Never ask again. It won't happen. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. No, they told him, don't ask anymore. You're not. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, can you imagine if someone like that doesn't have the authority to get into this? How much is actually being held secret from people all within our government, from president on down?
Well, I'm not so sure about Biden. Is there a need to know there? I don't think so. But you never know. It's true. I don't know. But Biden, no, he's an, well, why tell him he's an idiot? Let the cat out of the bag.
Point is,
it's all compartmentalized. It's very deep black. And it's for real. And they're playing games still with the disclosure. I guess Grush was telling it straight, but I think that was a planned release again. That's just my take on it. They're not going to let it out.
Yeah, it's very tightly controlled. It does. It stinks of propaganda, a lot of it. But, you know, I was encouraged by that recent congressional hearing with Grush, Graves, and Fravor. To hear the senator saying, there is a UFO cover-up. UFOs are real. Some of us have seen them. The Pentagon isn't cooperating. I mean, that was strong rhetoric. That was pretty much unprecedented.
Agreed. I agree. All right. We're talking with Preston Dennett, if you just tuned in. His newest book, and all his books are marvelous, Humanoids and High Strangeness. 20 True UFO Encounters. And you can get the Kindle version for $9.95. And that's, if you still like to read, and I know a lot of our listeners do, these are really enjoyable books. Are they in audio format?
Yeah, not all of them. I'm working hard on getting them out and arguing with some of the publishers about it. I'm trying to. A good portion of them are. This one will be soon.
All right, well, let's tease our listeners and myself as well with some of the stories in the book. What kinds of things are covered? And you might also mention where the information came from. I don't mean Europe or the U.S. I mean, what kind of people reach out to Preston Dennett? And how did you come up with this material? That's always fascinating.
Yeah, well, certainly it's all kinds of people. I mean, there's a pilot, a professor, a doctor, bank manager, a designer in terms of, like, models and things like that, students, all really the entire range, a businessman, a young student, housewife, so really all kinds of people. And they find me in different ways. Some see me on TV. That's happened a few times. They hear me on a podcast like yours, a radio show. I do have a website. I find some people that way. Or they read my books. I get a lot just plain old referrals from friends or family or friends of friends, that sort of thing. So it's not, a lot of people are having these experiences. A lot more than people realize. So these stories are not too hard to find. But for this book, I really wanted to pick accounts that had, a high level of credibility, perhaps, or multiple witnesses, or unique aspects, or had something to offer to our understanding of extraterrestrial contact. So, yeah, it comes from a wide variety. I've always got more cases than I can write about. So,
right.
In every case, and all the witnesses report, go through a whole vetting process, an investigation. Mm-hmm. So this is a years-long process, really, before a case makes it into the book.
Well, you're always very careful, and you screen things at the highest level. Just listen to this. This is fun. Now, if you want to get away from the angst and horror of what's going on all around us now, get one of Preston's books, and just it'll give you a lot of reason to feel like maybe there's another reality out there that we're being kept away from that might really help the planet if E.T. were ever to come in here and try to straighten out the evil that's running things. And it could. That could happen. I wouldn't rule that out. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody could come here and straighten this mess out.
You never know. Humanity might just come together at one point and allow love and truth to guide their actions. I'm an idealist.
No, it's fine. We need more of that. Very good.
But yeah, some really interesting stories. I mean, one that really captured my attention involved a lady who doesn't want her full name used. So I just use her first name, which is Janet. And what really resonated with me is her story took place, her experience took place in an area that I'm very familiar with, which was Woodland Hills. I basically grew up in that area, in Southern California.
Did you go to Woodland Hills High School?
No, I went to,
Woodland Hills High. Taft. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Taft. Did you go to Taft?
I sure did, yep.
My first girlfriend was a Taft High School student.
Oh, wow. Small world.
How's that? I lived in Thousand Oaks, and she lived in Woodland Hills. Yeah. That's funny.
Well,
very nice, very nice girl. Nice people. That was just
lady I interviewed, her name is Janet, lived on Wells Drive. I'm like, oh, wow, Wells. I know where that is. That's in Woodland Hills. I've been on that street. And she was just 10 years old. This is a early morning in 1969, summer morning. And she's biking around with her friends on Wells Drive. But this is, you know, what kids do. Mm-hmm. And they saw this UFO up at the top of this long, steep driveway. And, of course, they all went, what's that? And went running up this driveway. They couldn't
ride their bike. It was hovering, right? It was hovering.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Hovering right about treetop level, right above some eucalyptus trees. Mm-hmm. And they tried to bike up. The driveway was too steep, so they got off their bikes and they pushed it up to the top. And, of course, by that time it's gone, and since it's gone and they only saw it for a split second, really, a few seconds, it left their minds. It wasn't important anymore. And what was important was driving their bikes down this steep driveway and having fun with that. So that's what they did for the next 10 or 20 minutes or so, just kind of zooming down the driveway and going back up and zooming down. And they got bored with it and said, well, let's go home and watch TV and have some snacks. Well, Janet, she thought to herself, you know what? I'm going to go to the top of the driveway one more time, and I'm going to zoom down past all of my friends and beat them home. So she runs up to the driveway, gets to the top. There's nothing up there. It's just this little sort of lot, a flat lot with trees on it and a little bit of junk. Mm-hmm. And coming out of the trees, and this is high strangeness for you, is a little boy on a bike. Now, he's about, 100 yards away, 300 feet or so, 200. And he's wobbling on his bike back and forth, can barely maneuver it. And as he drives up to her, she realizes this is not a normal boy. He's wearing jeans, a Pendleton button-down shirt. He's got a bike with a sissy bar. But he's got four fingers on each hand. They're super long fingers. He's barefoot with enormous oversized feet, a very skinny neck, an oversized egg-shaped head, gray skin, almost no mouth, huge dark eyes. It's a gray. Now, her being 10 years old doesn't know what grays are. There really wasn't much talk in the media. But this was definitely a gray riding a bicycle up to her and gets off his bike, walks right up to her. I mean, she's face to face, petrified, can't move. This figure reaches out and touches her shoulder and says, "Don't be afraid. No harm will come to you."
Telepathically.
Yes. Yep. It's your basic encounter with the gray, except this is on a sunny summer morning in Woodland Hills, a crowded suburb, one of the crowded suburbs in L.A., actually.
Yeah.
And she freaks out. Next thing she knows, he's gone, just not there anymore. And she races down the driveway, still thinking she's going to beat everyone home. Of course, she makes it home in just a few minutes, and everyone's bike is there on the front lawn. She rushes inside. They're all in the living room watching TV. And they're like, "Where have you been? It's been an hour." "Like, what are you talking about? It's been only a few minutes. Did you see that freak monster boy?" And they're like, "Stop trying to scare us. What's wrong with you?" That was her first encounter. And it would be one of many. But it's so weird. Cause,
I mean, wow. That's a good one.
I didn't think there was anything quite like that, honestly.
No, that, you know, the suggestion there is that the E.T., the gray, wanted to interact with her, and it dressed up. Somehow it manifested clothing that was human that would fit it close enough to where it would make it easier for her to look at him and to consider him. I think that was the dress-up idea. And then the bike idea. Where did he get the bike? Where did he get the clothes? Did he just manifest it? Did they have it on board the craft as interactive props? This is strange. That's a wild one.
Yeah.
That's really. See, these stories you have collected, you've got a way of explaining them. I see them as movies. There's a lot of good plots here. A lot of good plots. And this is just the first encounter that she can remember. And there were many more after that.
Right. Well, actually, going back earlier, she does remember seeing a strange figure looking at her when she was playing with the neighbor in the yard.
Uh-huh.
But she kind of dismissed it, and she did tell her mom about it, was not believed. But it was a year later or so that she had this absolutely undeniable encounter. Well, she later, by the way, did explore under hypnosis and recalled seeing other grays and being pulled on board. There was a very strong memory block that she couldn't get past. But yeah, this was a fully conscious encounter, which until she was an adult and started hearing about grays and seeing them on TV, she did not connect the dots. Even though she had, you know, after that missing time and other encounters while driving and so forth. But yeah,
Did any of her friends, now they all saw we'll call it a saucer. Well, they all saw the UFO, right? And then it was gone. They saw it too. She wasn't the only one who saw it before she went up the driveway. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
They all saw it.
Did they sit down in the living room? Did they ever come to a consensus that, yeah, well, we saw something strange too? Or did that just go away? Those things are usually not talked about.
No, it was not talked about. In fact, she wasn't even sure she remembered that at first. She had to really meditate on it and like, oh yeah, you know, we did see something before this all happened, which isn't unusual. But the fact that she saw this boy on a bike really kind of spoke to me, because I do have similar cases where people talk about grays coming to the bedroom and they're dressed up perhaps as clowns or superheroes or Barbie dolls or cowboys.
They're doing the Marvel Comics thing? Superheroes now? That's funny.
Yeah, Superman. I talked to one kid who, well, he's an adult, but he had that experience as a kid. And it was funny to hear, you know, when these people try to describe these things, they're very wary about talking about it. I'm like, listen, probably heard something like this before. You just go ahead. Mm-hmm. The clown thing actually comes up more than anything in terms of dressing up or screen memories, now, you might call them.
Yes. This is very interesting for all of you out there. For some reason, ETs think that humans really like clowns. So they'll put an image in the person's mind, not of an ET, but of a clown. It's called a screen memory. They'll screen out the actual ET encounter with somebody thinking that they've seen a clown sitting on a fence or walking across a road. Clowns don't do that, of course, but clowns have actually come to symbolize for many, Preston, as you know, scary stuff. They're not funny. I've never liked clowns myself, but ET has picked that as apparently representing to ETs something that most people just love and adore and laugh about and so forth. It's not true. We don't. I don't. But it's a common image.
Yeah, perhaps in the 50s and 60s, this was something that was looked upon as being, you know, something that was fun and amusing. But now, if you look at society, all the horror movies, it's the killer clown from the state.
That's right. They're satanic now, no doubt. That's a great story.
No.
Did you follow up with her on her other experiences later on in life? I'm sure you probably did.
Oh, yeah. We still talk. I sent her chapter, in fact, to make sure it was all accurate. But she had encounters throughout life. She ended up moving to a very haunted house. A lot of that kind of activity, which is, I'm not sure it's directly connected to her UFO experiences or coincidental, but it certainly was high strangeness. But she
Go ahead.
You know, she did have other encounters with greys where she was pulled on board and physically examined and this sort of thing. Ended up like many contactees, and this is another thing I really wanted to feature. She became profoundly psychic, would have lots of premonitions, out-of-body experiences, became so good at mediumship that she would be compelled to read people. When she worked as a waitress for many years, and she would just see spirits around people. And she would usually ignore them unless it's a child who passed away. And then it was just too poignant for her to pass up, and she'd tell the parent, like, "I see your child." And it would move them to tears.
Oh, remarkable. See, you've just described a major motion picture of a woman's life beginning as a child, moving through, and the different experiences that she's had during her lifetime, including the haunted house and the psychic ability. Seeing it, I guess, I don't know how it would, how did she describe the dead child manifesting to her? Did she see the dead child or just see a void in the family when she was waiting on them? How did that, did she say anything about that?
No. I mean, yeah, she did, certainly. She sees it in her mind's eye, sort of like, what would you call it, I guess, visualizing. The messages very clearly. Doesn't necessarily talk to them directly. This can manifest in different ways. Some people will see them so clearly they think it's a living person and are shocked when it will suddenly disappear. Or they'll embarrass themselves by, you know, talking to them all loud, and people are looking at them like, "Who are you talking to? There's nobody there." And they're like, "Oh my gosh." In her case, it was in her mind's eye.
Did she give a message from the deceased child to the family? Was there any of that, like a communication from the deceased? Like, tell my mother and my father I miss them?
Yeah, it's generally along those lines and some sort of detail that will provide the confirmation that they need to know that this is legitimate.
Got it.
Is generally like the clothes they wore or, you know, the color of their hair and eyes and this sort of thing. But random strangers, I mean, so not like this could be easily set up. When someone just walks into a restaurant and there's your waitress and she starts reading you.
Wow, remarkable. Really remarkable. That would see that whole, her life story would make a great, Hollywood has real problems coming up with anything other than garbage now for stories. That would be a terrific story. Just the truth.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I've had a few movie guys looking at my books, so we'll see. It's all under wraps right now. But
you deserve it. I hope that happens. I hope it happens for that that lady, the woman. Geez, right direct from the horse's mouth, the whole story. Remarkable. All right, that's just one chapter in Preston's new book. All right, let's not tell the whole story so people buy. You got to read this book. That's. I wish I had time. I'd love to read all your books. I've read a couple of them.
Yeah, that's why I want to get them on Audible.
Yeah.
You can do it while you're driving or something. And I put a lot of my stuff on YouTube, so that's more accessible for some people.
Right.
I like a good book. You know, yeah, it does take hours, but being a writer, of course, I would like a book. You should see my library. It must have 1,000 books in it.
I'll bet you do. I bet you do. All right, tell us another vignette of a story you have in the book. That's a great one.
Yeah, all right. Well, here's, you know, I'd love to be able to tell the whole story of all of these, but we'd be here for hours and hours. But here's a really interesting case involving a gentleman who did allow me to use his real name, Robert Barton, who was from West Corners, New York, and at age 4 in 1965, had the strangest experience where he was in his living room watching TV. Mind you, he's 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. His mom's in the kitchen. His dad's at work. His younger sister's in the other room. And he sees through the corner of his eye someone staring at him through the window in the living room. And he turns his head and looks, and whoever it is drops down so fast he couldn't see who it was. And that happened 2 or 3 or 4 times till finally he's like, are these my friends? How are they doing this? The window's a little too high for, you know, a child to really look up at it. Mm-hmm. So he runs up to the window, sticks his thumbs in his ears, wiggles his fingers, and sticks out his tongue going, you know, nanu, nanu, nanu type of thing, like little kids do.
Yeah.
And up behind the window, you know, from the ground, up slowly rises this figure, which is not human. It's wearing a red vest, dark red sleeveless vest, but it's a gray. It's got the skinny little neck, big head, gray skin, large dark eyes, wrap around in this case. And he stared at it for about 10, 15 seconds. And then let out a blood-curdling scream because he realized this is not an animal. No, this is not a human. This is something he's never seen before. Runs to the kitchen and tells his mom. And she, of course, he drags her into the living room and points to the window and says, Mommy, Mommy, something's at the window. There's nothing there now. He won't go near it, but drags her to the window. And she looks out and says, Honey, there's nothing there. What did you see? He says, I don't know, Mom. I think it was a wolf. Because he didn't know what it was. And he described it. And she's like, a wolf in a red vest? Really, honey? He's like, Mommy, Mommy, I saw something. So this became kind of a joke in the family until it happened again and again and again. This happened a half dozen times. And this
over
was
a period
all
of how long of a period
a
of time? Okay.
Over a period of a year. And he would always try to have the staring contest with this gray alien. And the longest he ever lasted was about 30 seconds. This is the fear just builds up when you realize this is not human. But this is very similar to Janet's case, because I think this is an ET trying to sort of gently introduce himself to the witness, Robert Barton. And it kind of culminated a year or two later with an onboard experience, which he remembered fully consciously, being taken on board with his mother and his sister, neither of whom remember it, though the sister does remember seeing Graves coming out of his room and coming to her and knocking her out and carrying her to bed. And he is a corroborating witness for sure. But yeah, he remembers being taken on board and physically examined, and the ETs discussing his health. And he said it was not, you know, scary so much as slightly unpleasant, because it was like a doctor's office. But it did scare him when he heard the ET saying, well, we're not sure that he's right for this project because he has a major health issue. And he's thinking, oh, what's that? And the Grays kept talking, and finally they said, well, you know what? He's going to be okay. This health issue won't manifest until he's well past childbearing age. And which turned out to be true. He did have children, healthy all the way up until relatively recently, when he developed diabetes and a major heart problem. So that was
so these health issues, they were all readable by the Gray or ET when he was little. So there was some kind of a genetic marker for these things that were going to show up later.
Yes, exactly, which back then, of course, we didn't know about, but now we do. We can read genetic markers for, you know, the probability of developing illnesses of various types. And certainly they seem to be more advanced than us in a lot of different areas, certainly in terms of transport or, you know, shipbuilding, but medicine as well, absolutely.
Well, remarkable. Their ability to read someone at a young age like that and literally see how the life was going to play out. It's like it all already happened, and they're almost like it already happened, and they're simply looking at a report about the life to come. But anyway, these are probably just health things, but at any rate, remarkable. That's very interesting. This whole world is
very interesting, people's genetics. Yeah. It is quite odd. I mean, there's another case which is so remarkable involving a mother and son who were taken on board, and they both remember it. And he was taken on board at age 7 with his mother, but afterwards his mother, you know, said, you know, honey, I had an experience at age 7. Well, this witness that I talked to, he grew up, his name is Richard Simon. He did allow me to use his real name. His daughter at age 7 started having experiences. Well, his daughter grew up, got married, had kids, and her kid, not too long ago, was 7 years old. She's now, you know, 10. But at age 7, she started having experiences. So that's 4 generations of people in one family, all who have experiences starting at age 7. That's an amazing pattern that we see a lot. But we know that this is something that does track families.
Generation to generation. Many kinds.
Yep. Probably goes back a lot farther than that, too. But it just wasn't recognized, because the idea of extraterrestrials really wasn't in our society back in the 1800s. This kind of stuff was perceived as being perhaps spiritual in nature.
Correct. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really good stuff. Okay, we have time. We've got about 4 minutes. You want to do another one? That's a great one. One that's in the email, on the Amazon page, talks about a California woman and a tree spirit. Is that one you'd want to talk about briefly? A woman from California is visited by a tree spirit, ghosts, and little people. Also experiences missing time encounters and a wide variety of psychic events. Is this not the Woodland Hills woman?
No. This is from Julian, California, actually, okay. Right near San Diego. And I don't think I can squeeze this into 4 minutes.
All right. Well, take one you can then. That's okay. Take one that you can.
All right. Well, here's a relatively brief one. This is a gentleman who is a bank manager, actually, and a former professor who had never had any history of encounters but heard about sightings in his area. He lived in San Juan, Argentina. A relatively recent case, 2013, went out looking for UFOs, hoping to see one, didn't, was really disappointed, but that night went to bed, woke up 3 a.m. to hearing his voice being called. His name is Hector. And he heard his voice called three times, woke up, ran to the window, and there was a UFO darting across the sky. And being a pilot, he can recognize aircraft. And that was, I mean, it just kind of whizzed across the sky real fast. But what was so remarkable is that it had called him to the window. And that was his impression, that the UFO occupants, whoever they were, had woken him up to see this UFO because he wanted to see one. And it ended up 2 months later, he's in bed, the room fills with light, he wakes up, there's two ETs standing in the doorway. One's 6.5 feet tall, the other's 5.5, wearing olive green jumpsuits. These are much like grays, but a little more human looking. And he's scared out of his mind, terrified, until the ETs say, "You don't need to have any fear. We're not here to hurt you." And at that point, he says he felt this wave of love coming from them that was all-encompassing, overwhelming. He said it was a love like never before, is how he put it. And one walked right up to him, cradled his head in his arms, and said, "We have come to heal you." And gave him this little brown triangular-shaped pill, told him to eat it, which he did. He said it was quite bitter, but he ate it. And in essence, that's the experience. He kind of fell asleep shortly later, but woke up the next morning and still feel the tears on his cheeks from, you know, he was weeping through the whole experience from the emotion of it all.
How old was he, Preston, when this happened, please? How old, approximately?
He was mid-30s.
Okay.
Yep. I think that's right. At any rate, he was nauseous for about a week. It was really puzzling to him because he was a healthy guy at the time. So maybe they were treating him for something that had not manifested yet. He's not
sure.
I would
think, yeah.
But it was a healing experience for him, and it changed his life, as you can expect.
He actually cradled his head, the ET.
He ended up contacting me because he wanted to know if other people had had an experience like this. And doing his research, he came across my work into UFO healing cases. And that's how he contacted me. But a very interesting case from Argentina, which I think, you know, brings a new perspective to, because we always hear about stuff going on in the U.S., and we know this is worldwide.
That's a remarkable encounter. Wow, you're lucky. You're doing things that few people will ever be able to do, and you're doing it so well. That's just a great thing. So all of you out there, if you want to get away from this, not just expand your mind and go off into some Marvel Comics detour, but these are real people with real stories of real things that are happening to them. It's fascinating. A great one.
Yeah.
The book is called Humanoids and High Strangeness by Preston Dennett, D-E-N-N-E-T-T. Taft High School. Let me try and remember. The Toreadors?
That's right. Yep.
I got it right.
I haven't thought about years.
And I used to work, you know, you remember where Agoura was? You know where Agoura is, right? Well, there used to be a little go-kart, rent-a-go-kart track, and you could ride around, and it was right there at Agoura. And I used to work there and ran that little go-kart track. That was fun.
Oh, wow.
And then you remember where Malibu Lake was out there? You cut off at Agoura, you go out, Malibu Lake. Yeah, that's where that... That girl lived. She lived at Malibu Lake.
Oh, wow. major hotspot. Just saying, lots of cases there.
Well, maybe she wasn't really a girl after all, an ET. You never know. That's really funny, Preston. Thanks for sharing that. Great stuff. The book again is available. Just look under Preston's name, or go to Amazon. Humanoids and High Strangeness, Preston Dennett. Great job. Preston's going to be with us once a month, so we'll be talking to him not too far down the road about more things. And thank you, Preston. That was really fun. I appreciate that.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
All right. You take care of yourself. We'll talk soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay. You bet. Okay. I enjoyed that. That was fun. Hope you did too. We'll be back Monday. It's a weekend again. Be careful. Be safe. And do try to put some food away if you can. All right. Thanks for being here. We'll talk soon. Behind, and I'm not exaggerating. Gerald has created something here that is absolutely in a class by itself. There's nothing else that compares with it. If you still believe in reading, get the Trends Journal. Keep it around. It doesn't age. You can pick it up in 3-4 months and learn. You can pick it up in a year and learn. It doesn't wear out. It's a true phenomenon. Go to trendsjournal.com. That's trendsjournal.com.
Known worldwide as the most consistently fascinating, informative, and unique program on radio, the Jeff Rentz program can be yours to listen to anytime, anywhere, whenever you want to hear it. For pennies a day, our subscribers can download any of Jeff's thousands of programs featuring a treasury of newsmakers, researchers, eyewitnesses, and incredible subjects, all in MP3, commercial-free, crystal-clear 56-bit digital sound, and take these often unforgettable programs with them wherever they go. As a subscriber, you can also listen live at airtime, online, anywhere in the world, or browse through our archives of over 6,000 hours of legendary broadcasts. Subscribe now by taking the link at the top of Rentz.com and enrich your mind with the most unique panorama of vital information and the best independent, honest journalism in radio. Look for the Subscribe Now link on Rentz.com and give yourself the knowledge you need for these unprecedented times.